Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinati Guma. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Jean-Pierre Fester from Protea Capital Management and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks, guys, for your time. Let's start off with macro. We've seen really heavy sell-offs in the market time and time again, with the last one being last week. A lot of people are wondering when we could see the bottom. Alex, starting with you, will we only reach the bottom when the Fed changes course and is less hawkish, or are there other signs that we should be looking out for?
Good evening. So yes, obviously at the moment the market is very concerned that due to the tightening and of course the supply chain issues we've got globally, there could be a further slowdown in economies which could lead to a global recession. Right. So if there's a global recession, then theoretically the market sell-off can be extended substantially from the current levels as it is at the moment. Because if you look at where the markets are, first of all, the ratings were quite high and earnings was also perhaps quite high. And if you have a recession, not only will the rating drop, but also the earnings will drop. So as a result, markets can drop 50, 60, 70% like I've done before. So that's the big if at the moment. If you're not going to have a recession, then we'll most likely will have another buy the dip scenarios like we had a few times over the last couple of years. But it does seem like the market's a little more edgy at the moment, and that's why we've got so much more volatility. You know, the one day we're up 2%, the next day it's vice versa. So incredibly difficult markets at the moment, not only locally but also offshore. And as a result, I think some level of caution is required. But if you do see compelling opportunities, which they will present itself, it's also a very good buying opportunity over the medium to long term.
Jean-Pierre, there's so much going on in the economic environment. I mean, it's really become difficult to pinpoint what's responsible for the sell-off each time. And today I've seen China and Snap leading the headlines. I understand, of course, China with fears over economic growth and the persisting zero COVID strategy. But I'm not understanding the negative influence that Snap is having to such a big degree on Wall Street.
Yeah, agreed. I was also surprised to see, I mean, the Snap share price, as you're speaking right now, is down 40%.
Sure.
Just in one day. And because of what has happened at Snap, some other social media companies like Facebook, Pinterest, even Alphabet and some other tech shares are also down sharply. And what happened is basically yesterday, the Snap CEO was at a conference. And he said that their current operating environment and current results are quite far below their expectations and what they previously guided to the market. And that came as such a shock that we now see this 40% drop in shares. Now, maybe people are overreacting. There's also a bit of emotion involved. And when there's a gap in expectations, you see those emotions coming to the fore. But to Alex's point of earlier, when your starting point is high earnings and a high PE ratio on that earnings, there's a lot of scope for downside. And that is what we're seeing. So the market looks for a reason. Today, the reason is Snap. Tomorrow, it will be a different reason. But there's a lot of scope for downward movements when you start with an expensive valuation point in time.
Let's move on to another stock in the tech space that had been used to downward movements, but we did see a turnaround, I think, at some point yesterday, up 6%. Zoom, a stock that really popped in the thick of the pandemic, really losing its shine. I think its share lost about 85% of its value since its peak in October 2020. Surprising markets to the upside, with first quarter earnings also better than expected outlook for the second quarter and a full year. Alex, your thoughts on Zoom at this point with those better than expected results?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't look at Zoom in detail, so I can't give an informed
opinion. Jean-Pierre, do you have any insight on Zoom?
Well, what I would say is I had a quick look, and the cash flow wasn't as strong as what the earnings would indicate. And the fact that the share rose yesterday is more, I would call it, a relief rally.
Okay.
Because, as you say, the share price was down more than 80% over the last year or so. And then with the results not being quite as bad as people thought it could be, that relieved the rally, then took the share slightly up. But we see all kinds of competitors for Zoom these days. You know, we're talking on Zoom right now, but there's Microsoft Teams and a lot of applications that have built-in video. So I'm quite cautious of Zoom even though the share price has dropped so much.
All right, let's get on to questions from viewers. Please give me your views on Curro and Naspers at these levels. So I'll give you each one. Alex, choose which one you want, and I'll give the other one to Jean-Pierre. Curro and Naspers.
So I mean, obviously, Naspers has always been discussed every single time we're on the show. So we recently saw the Tencent results, which was disappointing but also expected. Operationally, the business, seen a slowdown in growth, and is starting to see margins being under pressure. And as a result, once again, the rating of the counter is now being questioned. It's been quite a perfect storm, to be quite frank, regarding Tencent and Naspers. So in China, we know, of course, the economy has slowed down. You've seen the regulatory environment, which has been incredibly stringent, and you've also seen sentiment probably hitting rock bottom levels. On top of that, locally, African investors have got disillusioned with Naspers and process management looking to close the discount. At the same time, some of the other Tencent assets has also started to have problems over the last, let's call it, last few months. So as a result, you probably are at rock bottom sentiment at the moment. And in our case, if you take a medium to long-term view, we are optimistic that Tencent is going to at some stage get the growth cylinders back on track again, and the business is going to start moving in the right direction. Most likely, you're going to start seeing sentiment improving, and that will overall increase the ratings of the counters, and as a result, will make it a quite attractive entry point. But patience is required. Naspers is not going to shoot a lights out anytime soon, and there might be even more downside before it recovers. But I certainly think if you take a 3 to 5 year view, I think you can do a lot worse than buying Naspers and Prosus at the moment, or even Tencent directly.
All right, Jean-Pierre, Curro, your thoughts on that counter?
Yes, look, broadly, you can value a company either looking at the income statement primarily or the balance sheet primarily. So you can do a valuation based on a multiple on the earnings, or you can do a valuation based on a multiple of the book value, normally the tangible book value. If we compare Curro and Advitech, Advitech is being valued on its earnings, and it's trading at, I think it's more than 2 times its tangible book value. Curro, on the other hand, has been under-earning, or rather they've been building out schools but not filling them. And that means that they're currently being valued more on the balance sheet basis, on a price-to-book basis. And they're trading more or less at the tangible book value of the schools. So that means the valuation is cheap, and it all depends on how quickly they can fill the schools with fee-paying students. And if they get to higher occupancies, if you want to call it, or capacity utilization, the valuation can rise to a significant premium to tangible books, similar to Advitech. So I do think you've got optionality. And as a last word, I would say part of the reason why it's trading so cheaply is because PSG Group has indicated that it will probably unbundle its underlying investments, including Curro. So there's an expectation that there'll be a lot more Curro shares coming onto the market, and that potentially depresses the price in the short term, which then creates an opportunity to buy Curro if you are optimistic on a longer-term view that they will fill their schools with more learners.
All right, so let's get to another question on Karooooo. Please ask the panel if it's better to invest in Karooooo through USA stock market or JSE at a current level. Of course, they have that primary listing on the NASDAQ, if I'm correct, and secondary on the JSE. Alex?
So I obviously finally follow Karooooo's listing in South Africa. We'll look at the ADR there in the United States. I'm not sure about the liquidity there, but liquidity in SA for Karooooo is very, very poor. So it's not a bad for personal investors, but certainly for institutional investors, it's very difficult to buy or build up a sizable stake in a business. But on Karooooo, we like the business. We think it's one of the few businesses in South Africa that's got a real organic growth profile going forward. Very well diversified across many geographies, and that generates very good cash flows. They're on a period now where they are investing for growth, and as a result, the guidance has disappointed some investors and seen a little pullback in the stock. But I think the investment theme still remains, and for us, a quite attractive opportunity once again, medium to long term. Valuation isn't particularly compelling at the moment, but because of the growth profile, they most likely will grow into it, and as a result, I think it's a decent opportunity.
All right, here's another interesting question. We have a large portfolio of mainly FANGs, thinking of selling all and buying Absa Bank and Standard Bank. Thoughts? So moving away from FANGs and into South African banks, mainly Standard Bank and Absa, Jean-Pierre?
Well, I think if you did that at the beginning of the year, you would have been smiling to the bank
Yeah.
or both banks that you would have bought. And since then, the FANG share prices have come down substantially. You know, the F in FANG, Facebook, now Meta, had a drop of like 40% year to date. The N in FANG, Netflix, has dropped more than that. I think it's 60 or 70% year to date. And some of the others, Alphabet, Apple, and Microsoft, if I add it as well, these days it's like FANG Ma, have also dropped a lot. So you can probably still do it because I do think the banks are relatively cheap in South Africa. But that window of opportunity is closing, and the longer your investment horizon is, I would say the more important quality is, and it almost trumps valuation in the short term. And I would prefer to be in the big tech stocks, those specifically, the FANG ones, for the long term, even though they might be more expensive than the SA banks. So on a shorter term horizon, yes, you can probably still switch. On a longer term horizon, maybe stick with your FANG stocks.
Alex, you're quite bullish on Naspers, of course, signaling your bullishness on Tencent. How are you feeling about investing in Chinese stocks that are listed in the US? Of course, today we had, or yesterday we had DiDi, the e-hailing service shareholders voting in favor of delisting from the US. Of course, this as the company's been clashing with Chinese regulators over cybersecurity, the cybersecurity review. So, how are you feeling about Chinese stocks that are listed in the US?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's obviously some complexity regarding that. So the big issue, of course, is, you know, the US wants to see access to do audits, proper audits, and have access to the books of the Chinese companies, which the China, of course, wants to refuse because they're scared that some of the intellectual capital will then be stolen by the United States and so forth. So as all, it does bring a lot of complexity, and the sentiment is once again rock bottom on those counters. And obviously, Dudu Chuxing's listing has been an absolute disaster. United States, we've seen the likes of Alibaba being under pressure and so forth. So there is obviously, and the Golden Dragon Index, I think, is down to, I don't know what, but massively so far from its peaks a few months ago. So it's a difficult one. I would be cautious, probably going to have to be on a stock-specific basis than talking in general. But perhaps better to, you know, consider buying in China directly or via Hong Kong, as to considering a US MMG, because you just don't know what's going to happen from a regulatory perspective going forward.
So, on that, there's, Jean-Pierre, there's also this ongoing dispute between the US and China over auditing requirements. Recently, Chinese authorities expressed a willingness to kind of ease down on the regulatory crackdown. Do you think that's just words, or can we actually expect a significant turnaround there?
Well, I think what I've seen in and from China in the past is that there's certain signaling when they say certain things, but that practically it takes a while for what they say to find expression in then what happens on the ground. So yes, they've expressed a willingness to give the US access to audit files, but I think it might take a while before the message gets to the right regulators in China, and the deal is actually done. And in the meantime, you still have this threat. So I agree with Alex that in the meantime, it probably makes sense to rather buy shares directly in Hong Kong and to perhaps think carefully before buying a share like DiDi, which tried to list in Hong Kong, but because they burnt their bridges in China, they rushed through their US listing and the Chinese asked them to pause. They were not given, they were not granted the right to list in Hong Kong. So I do think one needs to be very careful when it comes to companies that are listed in the US and are not listed in Hong Kong, like DiDi and Pinduoduo, for instance. Those ones are at risk that you'll still own shares, but they'll be in an unlisted environment, which is very tricky to be in that situation.
All right, let's go on to a counter that released results on the JSE today. That's Coronation, saying that earnings have started to normalize after the exceptional period that they experienced during the thick of COVID-19. So they anticipate economic conditions to remain under pressure, right? And they expect their flows to reflect that. That share price at some point up almost 4%. I'm interested interested in why the markets reacted differently to Coronation and 91 when they released results last week. 91 posting record earnings and assets under management, but that share price taking a beating of 4%, although they both flagged an uncertain environment going forward. Alex?
Yeah, so looking at Coronation results today, it's been a theme for quite some time. Obviously, they continue to have net outflows in the client business. So that means assets under management are simply growing because the overall market is growing. But they're losing actually market share per se, locally as well as offshore. And that's due to also South Africa's business, a net distance saving economy. We don't save enough, and as a result, you get continuous outflows. One of the reasons why the results were slightly under pressure was due to lower performance fees. So Coronation did very well about 12, 18 months ago, mostly after post-COVID. Performance has taken over a dip, and as a result, revenue is slightly down, even though the average assets under management were up. I think the reason the stock is up because the valuation is still relatively attractive for Coronation, despite them being quite ex-growth. If you look at the valuation, the ROE is in mid-60s, and they're making, I think, price of books about 6.5 times. That's attractive, and they've got a very high dividend yield of region of 10-12%. So that makes it relatively compelling, but there is no real growth going forward. 91 on the other side has got lots of growth avenues from an organic perspective. Valuation is not so enticing, but at least you're getting the growth, and it's also much more diversified globally as well. It's not purely African business, where Coronation is predominantly African business. They do have some offshore stuff, but yeah, I think 91 is a much better business, and if you're going to buy and hold for medium to long term, our preference will be for 91. I can't really comment on the day-to-day reasons. I mean, there might have been a small miss relative to expectations and so forth, but we are certainly preferring to hold 91 over Coronation longer term, though Coronation is relatively attractive at the moment.
Yeah, all right. And on your side, Jean-Pierre, I mean, just last week, did 91 really did that beating? Was it warranted?
Well, I see value in both these asset managers' share prices. So, I do think it's an opportunity. One can't necessarily say if a share price movement on any one day is warranted or not. So I agree that we hold both in our portfolios. And the one reason why 91 could be under pressure literally just for this past week and another day, well, tomorrow actually, Investec unbundles 10% or 15% of their 91 shares. So there'll be an increased free float, and the market knows that those 91 shares are coming to the market via the investor unbundling, and that means that some investors could have bought Investec and shorted 91 to play that arbitrage trade, and that could have put short-term pressure on the 91 share price, which could be relieved literally a week from now.
All right, there's a question sticking with you, Jean-Pierre. Any panelists following a Cloudflare hitting new lows, but having looked at what this cloud services provider plans are, I see value for a 3 to 5 year view. Jean-Pierre?
Yes, as you say, they are in website and IT technology and security, and it's got a large and growing market share. The revenue is growing very strongly. So as a company, Cloudflare seems to be in a very good position. Yeah. But there's a big difference between a strong and good company and a good investment. And the problem here is that Cloudflare's valuation is ridiculous. It trades at, I think it's something like more than 10 times revenue.
Yeah.
So no matter how good a company is, at some price, a good company becomes a bad investment. And I would say that's the case with Cloudflare. And there's a few of these IT companies listed in the US that have got market caps of $10 billion or more, but they're trading at 10 times revenue or more. And even though they're currently growing strongly, no trees grow to the sky, and therefore the valuation is probably too high. And the company can continue to do well, but the price could continue to drop as very lofty expectations come back to earth. And that might be what is happening with Cloudflare at the moment.
All right, let's talk about a counter that came out with results on the JSE, African Bank. Just signaling a successful turnaround, and they also laid out their plans for their strategy for FY25, laying out the targets there. I'm interested because obviously the Saab is due to sell its stake. Of course, they want to do that through a public offering. Alex, how bullish are are you on African Bank and its future?
Well, whenever they this sob looks to stake this sell the stake and give a prospectus, I'll much have a closer look at the business to get a true sense of what's going on there. But it's difficult to gauge what the quality of those books are still going forward, and tractors of the business, they've obviously worked through the worst over the last number of years. I think it was 9 years now. So the worst is probably behind them and so forth. But it's very difficult for me to say at the moment what the prospects are for the business. Not something I look at closely at the moment, to be quite frank. But I think they're the first time profitable, and we did see the advances growth was relatively decent and looking to continue to gain more retail deposits. That should reduce the cost of funding and make the business more sustainable going forward. But other than that, I can't really give you a very informed opinion, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm trying to gauge a market appetite for when it does go on to the JSE. Jean-Pierre, do you look at African Bank closely?
I do, but I wear a few hats. One of them is as an asset manager, but another one is as a non-executive director at Capitec. So it wouldn't be fair for me to comment on African Bank because people might think I'm saying it with my Capitec hat on, and not my hedge fund manager hat on.
Okay. No, I do understand. So just going into some more questions, viewers asking about Richemont, what the panel thinks of Richemont, considering that it came out with quite solid results, but we did see a beating on that share price. Alex?
Well, Rich was actually my stock pick for
Okay.
tonight.
All right. You can go on. You can go on.
Okay, Richemont is a really a great business. Valuation was very expensive, but has derated quite substantially year to date so far. The balance sheet is probably the strongest position it's been in a long, long time. Net cash about $5 billion or euros, and you've got excellent free cash flow, great brands. And yes, the share price might be under pressure mainly because of rising interest rates and so forth, but underlying growth theme and Richemont remains there. It's very difficult to get such a high quality business with such high barrier to entries, at very attractive valuations. But at the moment, I think it's a good entry point, and for those willing to wait on, so start buying now. If it drops, you continue to buy, build a position. But I think you can do a lot worse than buying Richmond in a moment.
All right, from same viewer, there's a question on Aspen. Surely Aspen manufacturing plant will be saved, in which case the share price is cheap. Well, I mean, they did come out with that update saying that they haven't gotten any orders for their own branded vaccine. But I mean, that manufacturing plant is still safe. They just said that, if it doesn't work out, then they'll probably just repurpose that facility for vaccine manufacturing. Your take on Aspen right now, Jean-Pierre?
Well, yes, as you say, the beauty of a lot of these pharmaceutical manufacturing lines is you can change from one product to the next. It might cost a few million rand, but it's not as if the whole plant goes to waste or needs to be written off. So it is in a certain sense tragic that we've got for the first time proper vaccine manufacturing capacity on the African continent, but now we have no orders. So let's see if the plant will be saved for the purpose of the vaccine. If not, it'll be repurposed, and it will produce something else. I do think there was a bit of excitement in the Aspen share price when it became known that Aspen would be investing together with J&J into this line, and that excitement has now gone out of the share price. So I think it's fairly valued at the moment. I don't think it's particularly cheap, but I don't think it's particularly expensive either. And I must just keep in mind, again, as it's sort of a theme of this episode tonight, your starting point is very important. And if your starting point is being too optimistic, then share prices can drop, even if the company is in an okay position.
All right, there's a question here. Which global and local ETF can one invest in for growth and dividend income for the long term? Or now is the time to invest with active management unit trusts? Alex, your thoughts?
Global ETFs, there's always a lot of options you can consider. And as we discussed earlier, some of the market valuations are still relatively high, and you could see a further derating, so be cautious of that. So start investing in phase, then put all your money in at one go in there. So if you don't want to invest in the US, for example, I think for me, UK market still looks relatively attractive, got a decent dividend yield in there. Most of the companies earn their earnings or revenues offshore as well. So I think that's a particular market that looks for me relatively interesting longer term. Otherwise, if you want to, we spoke about China, for example, if you want to consider Asian markets, so those are two options. US, I'll probably be more on the side of caution for now before looking to consider those. And then even general European markets as well, not looking particularly too expensive and so forth, but the growth, of course, is not the same level as this. I think you should, yeah, for me, I would say probably UK for the dividends and offshore, and then China for longer term growth if they can pull it around.
All right, on to stock picks. We did jump the gun there on your stock pick, Alex Richemont. On your side, Jean-Pierre, stock pick for tonight?
I'm choosing a US stock called Kohl's. It's a department store focusing mostly on clothing. So South Africans can sort of think about Edgar's. It's the, call it US equivalent of Edgar's. And the business is actually under pressure because of inflation. A few competitor businesses also come out with results recently and showed that there's pressure in the whole sector. But the Kohl's board of directors has made it known that they are open for takeover offers of the business. And they've been talking about this for a few months now. And that means, again, there was a lot of excitement in the share price. Now there's disappointment in the share price. So it's dropped by about 35% over the last month. And I think at this level, even though the company itself is just chugging along, the prospect of a possible takeover makes it an interesting opportunity during markets that are all over the place at the moment.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time tonight. Thanks to my guests, Jean-Pierre Verster from Protea Capital Management and Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.
Thank you.